Hello and welcome to season 10 of the Travel Diaries podcast. It is great to be back with you. I'm your host, journalist Holly Rubinstein, and here each week I'll be speaking to a very special guest about the seven chapters in their life's travel diaries. From their earliest childhood travel memory and the first place they fell in love with, to their hidden gem and what's at the top of their travel bucket list. We'll be uncovering their adventures around the world and the travel experiences and destinations that have shaped their lives. How are you all? I hope you all had a fantastic summer, or perhaps a fantastic winter if you're listening in the Southern Hemisphere. No doubt a lot of you will have been traveling over the last few months, adding new chapters to your own travel diaries. Have you discovered some new hidden gems? Maybe you've got a brand new all-time fave, or maybe there's somewhere that you'll never go back to. I hope not for that one. But let me know. I'm at Holly Rubinstein on Instagram, Threads, and TikTok. I always love to hear from you. I have recently returned myself from the Greek islands. Oh, the beautiful Greek islands. I'll tell you more about my stay next week. And I'm heading to Puglia in Italy, a destination mentioned by my guest today, actually, in a couple of weeks too. So I'm ticking off a couple of destinations that have been on my own travel wish list after a stretch of really being home-based for the summer. I try and avoid traveling in school summer holidays at the moment, until I need to. Speaking of school holes, I'll be releasing another family travel special later on this season. So if you have any questions or things you'd like me to cover on that, then do also get in touch. So this season, it's going to be a big one. Lots of episodes coming your way over the next few months. And of course, a lot of Wanderlust too. Actually, you know, so far, I think this season, having recorded quite a few of the episodes already, it's given me the most new destinations that I hope I can visit in the next few years. You know, places that weren't on my travel wish list necessarily and now are, having heard my guests chat about them, places that feel a bit more attainable. I really can't wait for you to hear what we've got coming up. I'm so excited. And we're kicking off season 10 by diving into the world of one of the most iconic figures in the music industry, a Grammy-winning artist whose distinctive voice and reggae beats have seen him top the charts over the past 30 years. That's right, we're joined today by Shaggy. That was Oh Carolina, Shaggy's debut single, his big breakthrough into the music industry all the way back in 1993. It became a chart-topping hit around the world and subsequent mega hits like Bombastic, It Wasn't Me, Angel, all further propelled him to global superstardom. From Kingston, Jamaica, where he spent his childhood and lives now, to the global stage, today we're going to be getting to know the man behind the hits and the destinations in his life that have played a part along the way, from Japan and Italy to New York and North Carolina. It's going to be bombastic, fantastic. You know I had to say it. Let's get started. Here is Shaggy. Shaggy, welcome to the Travel Diaries podcast. Thank you so much for joining me today. It is so exciting to see you. How are you?
Great. I'm not bad at all. I'm in New York City. Not a bad place to be anyway, to be honest with you.
Absolutely love New York. Hope you have an amazing time out there. And thank you for taking the time to chat with me today. We are going to go on a journey today, Shaggy, through the seven chapters of your life's travel diaries, starting at the very beginning with chapter one, and that is your earliest childhood travel memory.
My earliest one would be me being migrated to the United States. It's the first time I've been on a plane at that point, you know what I mean? And just stepping out into New York City, it was snowing and it was cold coming from Jamaica as a young kid. And I'm like, okay, where is this? And I see nothing but tall buildings. And I moved into my mother's apartment and I'm I think the biggest culture shock to me was the laundromat.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. I went to, I was very embarrassed because I went to a laundromat with my mother and she was doing the wash and folding clothes. Mm. And I was embarrassed because I'd just seen everybody's looking at her drawers and her clothes. And I'm like, yo, because there's other people. And I'm like, yo, I'm not used to this. Because in Jamaica, you do it in the privacy of your backyard and you hang it up in a line or, you know what I mean?
And it dries quickly.
It dries quickly. You know, this is like, I got to stand there, people looking at my private underwears and stuff like that. Would no, you know, and looking at her, no.
So interesting that, like, what an interesting nuance that sticks out in your memory as being like a kind of culture shock.
Yes, culture shock, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, growing up island life and then coming to a big city. Was that a happy transition? Were you enjoying that, or was it a bit much?
Yeah. I think it was a happy one, you know. I had a good time. I couldn't complain about it. It all kind of that happens in my life and coming up has kind of prepared me for what I'm doing now. The people that come into it, just the energy that comes in, it all prepares me.
A lot of my listeners will be hoping to travel to Jamaica at some point in their lives. It's, you know, it's a bucket list destination. It's a beautiful place, having spent so much of your life there. What are, like, say the three things that you tell a first time visitor you must do?
Three things. It all depends on whether you're going there for culture or you're just going there for vacay. If you're going there for vacation, then you got to be on the coast, whether it be Negril, whether it be, you know, you got to be in the North Coast. You're going to be Montego Bay, Ocharias, Negril. In some cases, you might go to Port Antonio, but Montego Bay, Negril, and Ocharias would be your destination spot.
Beautiful beaches, just gorgeous water.
Beautiful beaches. Obviously, in Negril, you have that 7-mile strip of white sand beaches.
Amazing.
It is great because you have every single thing from your food shop guy to all of that hanging around. So it's very reachable. You could go from one to the next, you know, and just apart from getting your hotel food, you could go in and get your local food and everything's just right there on that strip. It's not far. You know, you walk it. Then you have, like, if you're in Ocharias, then you're going to go to the Duns River Fall, which is pretty famous. You know, everybody tries to climb that waterfall and it's really something that everybody would go and look for.
Have you done it many times?
I've done it probably once.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing for me, I don't do a lot of the touristy thing. I prefer Kingston, you know. And then if you go into Kingston now, it's culture. It's a street dance almost every night. You know, you have the Bob Marley Museum. You have School of Music. You have all of these things that are connected to culture is really in the capital city. And you could feel it within the food, within the music, within the energy. And you know, that works.
And I mean, music is so intrinsic to Jamaica's culture. I mean, was it being surrounded by that inspired you to pursue music? Because I'm not sure about your start in music, how you got your big break. Tell me.
I started in Kingston. My grandmother was a big music fan. You know, she played a lot of records. She loved Toots and the Maytals. She liked Mahalia Jackson. She loved a lot of those gospel people, you know, because she was a church woman. But then I went to a place called Skateland one night and I saw this guy by the name of Yellow Man. And Yellow Man was a huge dance hall artist at the time. And I remember him walking into this party. He took up the mic and he spit a couple of lyrics and walked out. And the whole dance just walk out with him. And I said to myself, who is this guy? I want to be that guy. And from that moment, I caught the bug, you know? And I said to myself, you know, just being a fan of, there was Michigan and Smiley, a couple of these guys that were making these records. And I just kind of gravitated to music. Then when I came to the States, my mother migrated and I came to the States. I dropped into Brooklyn, which is a melting pot. You know, that's where I discovered soca music, Trinidadians, Bajans, Haitian music, Panamanian. Then I realized how all of these islands love dancehall and reggae. And it was the main thing that all the kids were into. And really just connected with me. And I started to do sound systems at the time because it was the main thing that attracted a young kid in Brooklyn. And in doing those sound systems, you know, I started to first to be a selector, which is like a DJ. And then from there, I ended up going into being an MC, you know, a DJ.
Yeah.
And then I started to make local dub plates and local reggae records. You know, one of them was a song called Mompy. It hit, and I find myself going into clubs for free, drinking for free, and leaving with the hottest chick. And it was the greatest life a young man could get at that age, you know?
Yeah, it must have been very exciting.
Yeah, and then it was good. And then after that, you know, I ended up just hanging in Brooklyn with the wrong set of people doing all the wrong things and decided I need to get out of Brooklyn. And I went ahead and joined the United States Marines. And once I got into the military, there was a war.
Yeah.
The Gulf War. And I ended up in the Gulf War.
Yeah.
You know, and throughout that time, I just maintained doing music while I was in the Marines. I was in there for 4 years. I did 6 months, 7 months in the Gulf War. Mm. And
I'm sure a lot of people don't realize that was kind of a precursor to Shaggy on our radios. It's
I mean, well, I'll tell you what, trajectory. I did a lot of growing up in the military because it really prepared me heavily from music by, you know, the discipline. I had to get up at 5 a.m. and, you know, I'm on time today doing what I do because of that military training.
Well, you know? I need to keep us on time. So we're working through 7 chapters here of your travel diary.
Okay, go ahead.
Let's move on to chapter 2. And that is the first place that you fell in love with.
I think the first place, and as far as with my travel, that I fell in love with, was Japan.
And what was it about it?
It was clean. It was so clean. And the people were so polite. Everything is hi, hi, hi. It's almost like they couldn't say no. Everything was yes, you know? And very, very soft-spoken, very polite, very technologically savvy. Everything Japanese was just so ahead. Mm. You know, I remember the first time these electric toilets were in Japan, way before they came out and everybody had them. I was like, yo, look at this. I mean, just fascinating. And then the food and the restaurants were clean. And, you know, I remember they had like KFC and it was in the Japanese writing. And we had like, yo, they got Japanese KFC. I mean, it was like, I really enjoyed it. I think I fell in love with it. And then I kept going back every year. There was a thing called Japan Splash that would go in a big reggae festival. And I would just go back. Yeah. And the people were just so nice and we always connected.
How interesting. I would never have like put, you know, a reggae festival in Japan, but is there a big audience for reggae music there?
Massive. We used to be. Now it's a little bit different, but when, you know, when dancehall and reggae, it was massive. You know, you're talking about 40, 50,000 people.
Whoa.
All Japanese.
How fun to be in that completely different culture and be performing your music.
But they were into the dancehall culture. And then they ended up having an artist by the name of Naki, a Japanese dancehall artist. And then you have, you know, right now you have a sound system called Mighty Crown, which is one of the biggest sound system in dancehall. And they are from Japan. You know, they have everything. They keep their own festivals, you know, and they do cruises, it's dancehall. It's a real movement there. So I fell in love with that first.
How interesting. Did you fly into Tokyo first? Was that your first experience of Japan?
Yeah, but I also went to Osaka, Nagasaki. I went to a whole bunch, to all of it. Yeah, and Okinawa. It's inspired me because you know that you're on the right track with the type of music that you make. You know, they speak Japanese, but they're actually enjoying and singing everything on your songs. Fascinating, you know. I enjoy that about them. And fashion.
Yeah.
They were always hip. You know, it's funny enough, you see Japanese Rastafarians with the dreadlocks and the whole nine yard. I'm like, whoa, they lock up their hair, yo. And, you know, they were in the colors and, you know, the clothing. And it's like, yeah, I was really, really, really moved with that.
Yeah. I mean, have your travel experiences over the years inspired your music, the different places that you've got to see traveling the world?
I think everything in life is an inspiration wherever you go. Sometimes you go to some places and it's inspiring in the way that you go to reset, you know. But to say that I would go to any particular country and listen to the culture of it and then try to write music to kind of fit that culture or fit in, no, I've never done that. I've always written music very selfishly. You know, I don't write music or make music to fit in or for any particular audience. I really do it selfishly for myself. And, you know, if I like it, and how I look at it is that, you know, no matter what song, if it wasn't me or Mr. Bombastic or any of these songs, I'm going to live with it a lot more than you are.
You're going to be performing every day.
Right. So I have to do something that I like to perform, you know, and get done. So, yeah, I just do them the way I want to do them.
Chapter 3, Shaggy, is the place where you learnt the most about yourself. Where comes to mind for that?
I think the military would be it, you know.
I was wondering if that might be it.
Yeah.
So where were you based?
I was based in North Carolina, but I traveled to, in the Gulf War, was in the Middle East, in Iraq. But during that time was really where I did a lot of growing up. And it's, you know, just when you're in a war in the middle of the desert and you're sleeping on a cot and you start to remember how many times you get up and didn't make your bed. Kind of wish you had a bed.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You know, I miss my mother's cooking. I was eating MREs. So there was a lot of growing up there, a lot of self-reflection. Gratitude was probably the biggest thing that I learned being in the military.
So you must have seen some scary things.
We saw action. Yeah. You know, we saw action. And it made you reflect on all of just your life, and gratitude was a big part of it. You know, you take so much thing for granted until we don't have them. It was like, yo, what was I ever complaining about? You know, so that was one.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, your music is imbued with such a sense of positivity. I mean, whenever I was mentioning to a few people that we were speaking today, you know, their faces light up. You're instantly a beacon of positivity. And maybe it was that experience that, you know, shaped your perspective and infiltrated into your music as like that, this kind of positive message.
Absolutely. That had an impact also. But I think another thing was, I realized every time I sing in front of an audience, when I sing these really beautiful, happy songs, I got smiles. Mm. And my whole job was to actually put smiles on people's faces. You know, I want to bring joy. And when I bring joy, I get joy back. And so I wanted to make really fun music. And I was criticized a lot for it when I was coming up because, you know, a lot of people was like, oh, well, you know, type of music. I didn't make music pure, authentic reggae music or dancehall music. I made hybrids. Mm-hmm. As you can imagine, you're making hybrids, you're going to get criticized by the purist.
Yeah.
You know, and my thing is, while I would never do any of those music unless it was done my way. If I couldn't see myself trying to top what Bob Marley did or Peter Tosh or Dennis Brown. You know, these guys were masters at their craft. Who am I to think that I'm going to do what they do and do it better? You know what I mean? So for me, I had to create my own legacy, create my own style. And yeah, I'm going to get some criticism for it. But in hindsight, looking at it now, where I've lasted over 30 years and you look at where music is and where dancehall music is and what it is right now. Well, I'm not, I think I'm kind of looking like a genius right now.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, you've had mega hits in 4 consecutive decades. I mean, what do you think is to your longevity?
One, keeping your finger on the pulse, just on the pulse of culture. You know, I remember when we were writing Angel. We did over Juice Newton, Angel in the Morning. But then we were saying, peeps, closer than my peeps, you are to me, shorty, you're my angel. Like, we changed those things to it. And that was just the slang of what's going on at the time. That's you keeping your finger on the pulse to put those things in that's connected, that is you know, relatable to your audience, you know?
Totally. Yeah.
Life is one big party when you're still young. Who's going to have your back when it's all done? It's like, okay, yeah, you get it. You know what I mean? It's relatable to people. You know what I mean? She was there through my incarceration. I want to show the nation my appreciation. You know, it's relatable, you know?
Exactly, yeah.
So I've that is the secret of what it is. If there is ever a secret, is me making something that I know is relatable. You know, I remember Lionel Richie said to me one time, you know, Shaggy, I've only written one song. I'm like, one song? What are you talking about? He said, I wrote one song. It's called I Love You. I'm like, oh, really? He's like, yeah, it never fails. You know, I wrote once, twice, three times a lady. And I love you, lady. You're my knight in shining armor. And I love you. And he just kept doing these songs that had I Love You in them. And I'm like, wow. You know, it says, hey, never fails. You know why? Relatable. Whether you're young, you're old, you're black, you're white, you're straight, you're gay, you love.
Yeah, timeless.
It never misses. It's just how you say it, what melody, you know, and how it's presented. And it's the same thing. Mm. There's not a record being made now that has never been made before. Let's face it. Do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do. Nothing changes. We're not inventing the wheel here. You know, but it's one, it's timing. It's how you present it in your time within the culture that you're in and make that work. And that is, you know, what it is. And then I made music with my own taste as an artist. The biggest gift I ever got was my ear.
Yeah.
I will be able to hear something that I think will work. And it's going to work because I like it.
Yeah. And you can sense that.
Yeah.
But what's mad, right, is that after Mr. Bombastic was such a huge success, you got dropped from your label mm-hmm. at the time. And then, like, one of the greatest ever comebacks when you put out Hot Shot and it had number one record after number one record. I mean, Chapter 3, as we said, is a place where you learned the most about yourself. You must have learned quite a lot about yourself with that kind of roller coaster.
Oh, I learned that it's business. Because I was signed by Ken Berry, who's the head of Virgin at the time. There were some people there that I worked with closely. Music was everything to me. And I thought these people were my family. I dined with them. I went to their homes. And the minute I was dropped, I never heard from them again. Mm. And that really was like, whoa.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's brutal.
Yeah. And mark you, you know, we had Mr. Bombastic was a smash. We did That Girl with Maxi Priest that was also a smash. So I had hits. I put one album that didn't connect. And they were like, oh, it's reggae. It's like chewing gum. It's out of juice. Spit it out. And that angered me.
I can imagine. It's so fickle.
It angered me. And then they dropped me to drop Maxi Priest and they signed Beanie Man at that time.
Yeah.
He was like the new flavor. And I was like, oh, is this what you're doing? Mm. You know? And yeah. I was just angry. And I wrote Love Me for How Stella Got Her Groove Back. Caught back another number one in America, and then got back into the I wrote Wasn't Me after that, and I was back, and I came back with a vengeance at that time.
And
I think probably a couple of executives got fired, but it's okay.
Chapter 4, Shaggy, is your all-time favorite destination. Where would you pick for that?
When I say all-time favorite, I would say my go-to place that I would want to go back to, right?
Yeah.
That would be Italy. Mm-hmm. The Italian, first of all, they love reggae. It's always been a place that embraced the Jamaican culture. Food is great. Just, I love the little mom and pops. I like being on the coast in Catanzaro and Bari and these places.
Down in Puglia.
Yeah. You know, I love a lot of places in Italy. You know, Italians are like everybody's well-dressed, you know. You see taxi drivers in Armani suits.
Yeah.
I was like, you know, and there's a bit of laziness there, you know. After a certain time, they don't work. They eat after a certain time. You know what I mean? And they're different places where each one, it's almost like each part of it is a little different culture. You know, in Napoli, it's a different culture from Milan. In Rome, it's kind of a different culture. It's all Italian, but the you feel the vibe in each place different, you know?
And there's so much to explore.
Yeah. And that's, it's not like it's just one thing. It's, you go around each one in each parts is a little different, you know, but it's always a sense of family and always a sense of food, you know?
And warmth and hospitality.
Warmth, hospitality, and then there's religion. Yeah. So, you know, I explore it, and every time I go back, I find something, you know, that really connects with me. I spent a huge vacation with my family in Sardinia, and it was wonderful. There's two sides. There's the, you know, the upper class side, and then there's the other side that is really on the coast, which is a really just your little mom and pop kind of, you know, town, and little restaurants and the beaches, and that I really got into.
It's known for having amazingly clear water as well, isn't it?
Oh yeah, that helps.
Yeah.
And what was good is
turquoise.
We took boats to different part, and each water had a different texture.
Interesting.
Like the texture of the water in different places that we swim. Sometimes it was a little crisp, and other times it was like super salty, another time it was like more on a brackish type, you know, where it's, yeah, it was very interesting to me.
A bit velvety.
Yeah, like exactly. Each one of them were like different, you know.
Wow, that's very cool. You could do a tour of Sardinia's different
waters. Yeah.
Sensory waters.
Yeah. You know, I found that, you know. But just good. It was just good to just sit there in the water and just have a great time.
I'm coming from an island man, another island.
Yeah.
If it's up there on your list, then it must be good.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. not as warm, the water, not as warm, but you get used to it. And it was a lot of, I love the fish, a lot of fish, fresh. Yeah, it was really, 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 really good. And the food and the people. And yeah, I really like that. So that would be my go-to.
Love.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Today's episode is supported by Airbnb, and what a great partnership. If you're a longtime listener of the Travel Diaries, you probably know that we love to put our home on Airbnb when we're traveling. Like last autumn when we took the family to Puglia, we put our house on Airbnb when otherwise it would just be sitting empty, which meant that we earned some extra money that went towards our flights and maybe some souvenirs too. Hosting on Airbnb for us is also a family affair. My mum is an Airbnb superhost. She regularly has guests stay in her little chalet in her garden. And my dad, who lives in France, has his home on Airbnb so that when he comes back to visit, he is earning some extra money while he's away. My dad is 80 and he only started hosting on Airbnb a couple of years ago. So hopefully that shows you how straightforward the whole experience is. He found it so easy to list his house that I think he's got all his pals signing up now too. And it really is straightforward. You can choose whether you want to rent out your entire home or just some rooms. Alex and I, for example, list our spare bedroom and that works really well for us. So if you have a trip coming up and you want to earn some extra money while you're away, your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.co.uk/host. That's airbnb.co.uk/host. Thank you to Airbnb. it. Chapter 5 then, Shaggy, is your hidden gem. It's a place that you love that my listeners wouldn't know so much about. Can you bring one to life for us?
That listeners wouldn't know would be Port Antonio, Jamaica. And why it is a rainforest. It has beaches. It is crystal clear waters. And it is one of the most wonderful places. And if you're scared of being rained on and you just want sunshine, don't go there. Because if you're there for 5 days, you're going to get rain. But it is the most beautiful, the most lush part of Jamaica. It is just greenery. And then it has these beautiful beaches. And it is one of my favorite. And jerk is one of the best thing. You want jerk chicken or jerk pork or jerk anything, that's the place to get it. So I would recommend that. Yeah, Port Antonio. They call it Portland. It's a hidden gem. I wouldn't just go. Yeah, you know, you're going to go to Montego Bay or, you know, Kingston or somewhere else. That is somewhere you're going to go and just be like, yeah, all right.
Brilliant, brilliant. Okay, well, in contrast to that, chapter 6 is your worst travel experience.
I like going to new places and catching new cultures and stuff like that. But let's face it, travel now compared to travel before 9/11 is two different things. You know what I mean? Mm. And I find travel now, I go past the technicality part of it, you know, which is your TSA and you're checking in and blah, blah, blah. It could be quite nice, you know, but it's good to go to just different countries and just go and just soak up different cultures.
Yeah.
And sometimes I get time to do that. Other times it's really like in and out for work.
Well, Shaggy, it has been so much fun traveling around the world with you. Our final chapter, chapter 7, is the destination that is at the top of your travel bucket list.
Top. If I have to go ahead and pick one, bucket list, you say, where I have to do it before I die.
Just a place that you've always wanted to go
and never been.
Not had, no.
that's a good one. I always wanted to, I've made many attempts to go to any, and I think it would be Zimbabwe.
And why so?
Yeah, I've tried to go there a couple of times and just couldn't happen for whatever reason. But I met a young lady that was from there and totally told me about how wonderful it was. And I kind of wanted to go there and kind of catch it, the vibe of it myself. And I never really made it. So that would be one of them that's on my bucket list. And I've been to many places in the world, but that would be really, really, really good. To just go there.
You get to make it there.
Yeah. And just kind of, I can't tell you what to expect or why or anything, but it's so much history there too, you know? So it'd be, you know, the whole Mugabe thing and it's, yeah. So that's kind of where I would like to go.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Shaggy. Those were your travel diaries. It's been so much fun.
Yeah, man. Much respect. Thank you.
Oh, what a lovely way to end the interview. That was Mood from Shaggy featuring Kez. And that is from Shaggy's EP, which is out now, called In the Mood. It is guaranteed to prolong your summer. Just wonderful summery vibes. Absolutely love it. And what a way to open the season. Shaggy, a musical legend, thank you so much for joining me. Thanks so much for listening today. If you'd like to hear more from the podcast, don't forget to hit subscribe, or if you use Apple Podcasts, to press follow so that a new episode lands in your podcast app each week. If you want to be the first to find out who is joining me on next week's episode, come and follow me on Instagram. I'm at Holly Rubenstein, and you'll also find me on Threads and TikTok. I'd love to hear from you. And if you can't wait until next week, remember, there's the first 9 seasons to catch up on. That's over 100 episodes to keep you busy there. Don't forget that all the destinations mentioned by my guests are included in the episode show notes here on your podcast app and listed on my website, thetraveldiariespodcast.com. Thanks again, everyone. Take care, and I'll be back next week. Today's episode is supported by Airbnb, and what a great partnership. If you're a longtime listener of the Travel Diaries, you probably know that we love to put our home on Airbnb when we're traveling. Like last autumn when we took the family to Puglia, we put our house on Airbnb when otherwise it would just be sitting empty, which meant that we earned some extra money that went towards our flights and maybe some souvenirs too. Hosting on Airbnb for us is also a family affair. My mum is an Airbnb superhost. She regularly has guests stay in her little chalet in her garden. And my dad, who lives in France, has his home on Airbnb so that when he comes back to visit, he is earning some extra money while he's away. My dad is 80 and he only started hosting on Airbnb a couple of years ago. So hopefully that shows you how straightforward the whole experience is. He found it so easy to list his house that I think he's got all his pals signing up now too. And it really is straightforward. You can choose whether you want to rent out your entire home or just some rooms. Alex and I, for example, list our spare bedroom and that works really well for us. So if you have a trip coming up and you want to earn some extra money while you're away, your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.co.uk/host. That's airbnb.co.uk/host. Thank you to Airbnb.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.